This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, in for Meghna Chakrabarty. On the campaign trail for the 2020 presidential election, Joe Biden said something that stuck with voters. He called himself a, quote, transitional candidate. But what exactly did he mean? At the time, many interpreted it to mean he would be a one-term president. But when he was asked that very question at a town hall in October 2020, his answer was more broad and ambiguous.
The comment that I view myself as a transitional president, they meant, is that one term, is transition to your generation. You're the best educated, you're the most open, you're the least prejudiced generation in American history. The future is yours and I'm counting on you.
Mr. Vice President, thank you.
And besides saying he'd set the stage for a millennial-run America, he also promised a lot more. He said he would, quote, transition the country into a new era. Here he is making that very vow the night the election was declared on November 7th.
Let this grim era of demonization in America begin to end here and now.
But after 18 plus months on the job, Washington is as gridlocked as ever, and with the president said to be seriously considering running again in 2024, many are wondering, where are we in this transition and where is it headed? To help unpack all of this, we're joined today by Mike Lux. He's a longtime Democratic political strategist. He was also a White House employee during the Clinton administration, served on the Obama-Biden presidential transition team, and was a staffer for the 1988 Joe Biden presidential campaign. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. Welcome to On Point, Mike.
Thank you, Kimberly.
And we're also joined by Jonathan Lemire. He's the White House Bureau Chief for Politico. He also is the host of the show Way Too Early on MSNBC. And he's the author of the upcoming book, The Big Lie, Election Chaos, Political Opportunism, and the State of American Politics After 2020. He, too, is joining us from Washington, D.C. Welcome to On Point, John.
Kimberly, great to talk to you again. Happy to be here.
So I want to start by asking, what did Biden mean when he called himself a transition candidate back in 2020? John, I'll start with you.
Well, that phrase was a matter of much debate within the Biden campaign. There had been some discussion of actually making a pledge to only serve one term. They were cognizant that Biden would have been the oldest man ever to be elected president. At the moment, he's now pushing 80 years old, and they were afraid that he could be perceived as either too old or out of step with the moment's politics. Remember, Biden had already ruled out a run. He didn't plan to in 2020 until the events of Charlottesville, Helsinki, and others pushed him to do so because he felt like Donald Trump was an existential threat to the nation's democracy. But that idea of making that one-term pledge was discarded fairly quickly in the Biden campaign for the fear that you're a lame duck the moment you take the oath of office on Inauguration Day. So it took a broader tone, never really defined. But there was indeed a sense that Biden would be a candidate who would move past the torch from one generation of Democrats to another, that he represented an older generation, and that he would serve, whether it was 4 years or eight, and then act as a bridge to the next generation. And he made a nod to that, obviously, in the choice of his vice president, Kamala Harris, decades younger than he, when he took office. And that was one who the Democrats, though never perhaps particularly passionate or inspired about Biden, they responded to his candidacy because he was seen as the person with the best chance to beat Donald Trump, which was priority number one.
So we asked our listeners what they thought Biden meant when he called himself a transitional president. According to Alex Ortiz from Seattle, Washington, no one really knew what Biden meant.
I think Biden's phrase that he would be a transition candidate became a Rorschach test where everyone drew their own conclusion about what he meant. For some, the transition was between the old white male Democratic Party and the new, more diverse progressive front. But for me, I think it was simply a transition from the Trump administration's authoritarian leanings back to the centrist status quo. And part of the reason we're stuck in this political limbo is that everyone had very different expectations of Biden. So there was really no agenda mandate. Even though I'm a progressive, I'm very aware that a large number of Americans didn't vote for Biden to become the next FDR. They simply didn't want Trump in office anymore.
So, Mike, was that the idea to allow the voters to read into whatever they will about the word transition in 2020?
Well, there's a phrase that sometimes used in foreign policy called strategic ambiguity, and I think there is an element to that. But what I certainly interpreted at the time and now is that the transition was from the moment we're in. We're in a unique and really difficult historical moment in this country. We haven't dealt with the crises that have been coming toward us, like climate change. We had this completely dysfunctional presidency that had broken all the norms, and rules and laws we're finding out more and more. And Biden wanted to stabilize things and bring back those norms and bring back the kind of governmental functions on a more rational basis, but also make the transition to the long-term crises that we have to deal with. The fact that we had not made a serious investment in infrastructure in decades, the fact that we hadn't done much of anything about climate change, the fact that the racial justice crisis, which has been brewing for a long time, and he wanted to make a transition toward a more functional government and toward solving some of those big problems.
So, John, was he able to do that? I mean, he did pass an infrastructure bill. There was a gun control, a gun background check bill that was passed, but he has not made much headway on things like voting rights, like climate change. So is he transitioning in the way that even he signaled he would?
Certainly, White House aides would argue that he has. They would point to the massive COVID relief bill that was passed in the early weeks of the Biden administration. They would pass to what you just mentioned, the bipartisan infrastructure bill. They would note that he has brought the temperature down across Washington after the 4 years of Donald Trump, that he has restored alliances overseas, his leadership rallying the West to back up Ukraine against Russia, and so on. But you'd be hard-pressed to argue that he has changed the tenor of politics in our nation right now. Biden portrayed himself as a candidate, reflecting upon his nearly 40 years in the Senate, as someone who could reach across the aisle, a bipartisan deal maker, who could restore the way things used to be in Washington post-Trump. And though, as just noted, he's had a couple of successes, the country, per polling, is as divided as ever, completely polarized, Team Red, Team Blue. Donald Trump, though no longer in office, is certainly not off stage. And right now, despite the ongoing hearings held by the January 6th committee, Trump is the odds-on favorite to be the Republican nominee were he to run again in 2024, which he is strongly rumored to do so. And this president, President Biden, faces extremely low approval ratings at the moment. In fact, lower polling now in the mid to upper 30s, lower than Trump did or any of his recent predecessors. Now, certainly, it's not unusual for a president to suffer some headwinds going into his first midterms. But between inflation and high gas prices and just an overall sense of frustration from voters, that Democrats currently control the White House and both houses of Congress and were not able to do things like preserve voting rights on the federal level, have not been able to muster much of a response to the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. There's a real sense of malaise right now along in this nation, but President and his aides believe they still have time to turn it around.
So, Mike, this malaise that John is talking about, this dissatisfaction that Democrats are expressing, is that something that's should be a concern of Biden if he chooses to run again? Does it really mean that voters may not turn out for him, that they may not vote for him? Or is this mostly hand-wringing because, as John laid out, many of the agenda items that voters were expecting haven't been carried out?
Well, of course a White House should be concerned if their poll numbers are low, that makes sense, and if people feel that sense of disappointment. We are at a very tough moment in this country's history. There is a lot of dysfunction in the culture, in the society, and in the government. We have a basically dysfunctional Senate right now, which is very hard to get things done. People are feeling disappointed. But I would, I would make a couple points. One is, you look at the French presidential election. Macron had an approval rating of 37% the day he won the election, 59-41. Elections are a choice. They're not a referendum. They're a choice. And so I think that as we go forward, we're in a period where people are not happy for understandable reasons. COVID, is so tough and so long term. There's so many mental health issues going on. And in a recent poll that I did, more than half of the people that we polled said that they or a close family member had experienced mental health issues over the last few years, mental health problems. So we're in a very tough time. People are unhappy. I do think that as time goes on, that the Biden administration and Democrats in Congress can make more progress in stabilizing things, getting things back on track.
I'm going to pause you right there. We're discussing President Biden's role as the so-called transition president and how he's performed so far in 18 plus months on the job. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Storr. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Storr. This hour, we are looking at President Biden's role as the so-called transition president. We're joined by Mike Lux, a longtime Democratic political strategist, and Jonathan Lemire, the White House bureau chief at Politico. So we've been talking a lot about how Biden's been doing so far. Let's now hear from someone who voted for him in 2020, but reluctantly. Angela Peoples is a 35-year-old and a political activist and organizer based in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. She is co-founder of The South, which describes itself as a lifestyle brand where unapologetic Black culture defines political power. She actively supported Elizabeth Warren in 2020, but after she dropped out in March, Angela said voting for Biden was her only option.
But I don't at all think that me casting that vote for him in November 2020 was the thing that was going to enact the vision of the country that I wanted, right? That was basically a harm reduction, for lack of a better word. At the very least, voting for Biden would prevent some of the harm that I knew was going to happen if Donald Trump was the president, but it certainly was not a vote in favor of the future that I think this country deserves.
Now Biden's been in office for 18 months, Angela isn't too impressed. She thinks he's stuck in the past.
I think that there's just this nostalgia for a bygone time of, when people came together in these different situations, and you could put your politics aside on particular issues. It's just not happening. In fact, the country, as well as the political leaders, are more and more partisan. And I think that he's trying to move us back to some version of what he thought we were or what folks thought we were. And the reality is there is no going back. There's only a ability to go forward. But I just don't think that he has a vision for what is ahead of us and who we can become as a country and as a people.
And she's also upset that Biden hasn't come through on some big issues he promised to take action on, such as student debt forgiveness. She also says issues involving Black women, a voter base she says that really came through for him in 2020, has been forgotten.
President Biden made a big to-do when he was running for office about Black women, about Black communities, and why we should vote for him. And I think that it's important to note that he's not delivered on the kitchen table issues that are important to our community. You know, it's certainly historic to have Kamala Harris as the vice president and to have Justice Brown Jackson on the Supreme Court. Those are certainly historical things. But when it comes to the issues that are going to impact the material conditions and Black women's lives, especially, you know, childcare, paternity leave, student debt, you know, voting rights. These are our issues that the Biden administration simply has not delivered on. And I think he owes Black voters, especially Black women, more.
Besides her gripes with how much more Biden could be doing, she also has issues with the direction of the Democratic Party as a whole.
There is such an unwillingness to accept the new energy and the new enthusiastic blood within the party. And there's much more of an attempt to just keep the same old folks that have been maintaining the status quo for so long. And I do find that to be a bit discouraging. And I think that it does not bode well for the future of the Democratic Party.
That was Angela Peoples. She's a political activist and organizer in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So, Mike, I want to let you finish your point about what voters are experiencing, the point that you started in the last segment. But this sort of aligns with the point that you were making.
Yeah, I mean, Angela, who by the way, I think is terrific, and I've known her. Known her work. You know, she makes a lot of good points. There have been a lot of things that are not delivered, and it's part of the dysfunction of government. We have a Senate that doesn't work very well. We have we have the most narrowly divided House and Senate in modern history. So we have very tough going, and we haven't been able to get some really key things done. I think Biden gets, you know, deserves some of the blame for that. But, you know, when the Republicans are 100% opposed to cooperating, and there's a couple of Democrats who don't want to change the filibuster or do a lot of other progressive good things, it's hard to get things done. I would say though that, you know, I think one of the things that we overlook when we're talking about politics is the small but really important things for people that will matter, you know, in people's lives. For example, probably no one knows this outside of postal workers. But Biden and Democrats, with some bipartisan support from the Republicans, essentially saved the Postal Service this year with a bill that passed. The Postal Service had deep financial problems, was on the verge of going bankrupt soon, and they got that done. They made that happen. And that's going to mean, all kinds of people who don't have access to other kinds of postal delivery will still be getting their mail. On pensions, Joe Biden just delivered a major pension reform that will help millions of workers who were having problems getting their pensions that companies had reneged on. So there are a lot of things that don't get press attention, that don't get a lot of discussion, but that are getting done. And I think those things are building blocks toward improving the lives of working class and middle class Americans.
Well, John, I want to ask you a question about the messaging from the White House that Mike's pointing out, saying, you know, these are things that people may not realize that the administration has done. And also the media, the role that the media plays in how negatively voters view the administration's work. Barbara Rigney from Ann Arbor, Michigan, left a voicemail telling us that whether Joe Biden should run again and who should lead the Democratic Party is a, quote, ridiculous question for 2020 when democracy is on the line. She also adds that asking this question represents the media's focus on the, quote, horse race politics that she says is really damaging. What do you say to that, John?
Well, certainly any president, and often supporters of a president, complain about their media coverage. That comes with the job. I think that certainly there are some in the White House and those Democrats close to the White House who believe this administration should have done a better job messaging its accomplishments, messaging what it's done so far, and therefore arming Democrats with a better platform for this fall's midterms. But I also think the point that you had the listener on earlier, the interviewee, about how Biden seems to be coming from an older era. And I think that is something that is becoming a more and more common refrain among Democrats. And there's a sense among them that Joe Biden was exactly the right man to beat Donald Trump, but may not be the right man to defeat Trumpism, that he has been a little too reluctant to give up the bipartisan ways of the Senate that he spent so many decades in, that he still speaks very fondly of Mitch McConnell as a person, even if he disagrees with most of McConnell's politics, that they feel like he has not given proper voice to how so many Americans feel like existential rights have been taken away from them, the right to choose, the right to vote, the right not to get shot while you go to school or the grocery store. And they want, and even though they, most Democrats recognize that Biden's hands are somewhat tied in terms of trying to get significant legislation through on any of those issues, particularly with a 50-50 Senate and a couple of holdout senators, namely Joe Manchin, standing in the way, they want to see more fire from him, more passion from him, more of a recognition that he understands that these are existential threats to the democracy and to his very own constituency. So I think that is a growing frustration among Democrats, reflective, and plays a role in the president's poor poll numbers and the questions surrounding whether he would run for office again.
So I want to bring in another voice to this conversation, a familiar one, Jack Beatty, our own news analyst here on Point. Jack, welcome.
Hello, Kimberly.
And so I want to ask you about what do you think voters want right now? I mean, Biden's approval rating is quite low. It's at about 33%. What do you think voters want from Biden specifically and from the Democratic nominee, whomever he or she is, overall?
Well, you know, we have evolved what scholars call a rhetorical presidency. Presidents are remembered. They register on our consciousness with public speech, with moments. Thus, President Reagan, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall, and we think greatness. Thus, President Obama, singing Amazing Grace at Mother Emanuel Church, and we are moved and amazed. Donald Trump instructing us to drink bleach, and we don't know whether to laugh or cry. The historian Clinton Rossiter said, the president is the nation's trumpet. Well, here's what the nation's trumpet sounded like yesterday in Massachusetts. Mr. Biden speaking at the site of a former coal-fired power plant in Somerset, Massachusetts. Here he is. He says, but I remember driving home. When you take the trolley going out North Washington and Adams Avenue in Scranton, within 15 blocks, we didn't live in the neighborhood, in the region, in the town where the Scrantons and other good, decent people lived. There was a, you'd go by a wall that, my recollection is, it was somewhere between 15 and 18 feet tall, and it went on. Oh, it was essentially a city block, and you could see the coal piled up to the very top of the wall. That's Joe Biden speaking in his own voice. The president throughout his career has had trouble with his own voice. As a young man, he stuttered and, you know, would recite the poems of Yeats. She had become a glimmering girl with apple blossom in her hair to get his voice working. When he, in law school, he nearly was thrown out for borrowing someone else's words. When he ran for president in 1988, he used other people's words and was essentially mocked out of the campaign. When he ran in 2008, he had nothing to say in his own voice. And in a strange way, he's come to a point where he needs to find the words to connect. And for his lifetime, he has never been able to find them. And I think, I won't say that's why he's failing, why the polls are so bad, but it is a chronic problem that he simply doesn't connect with the moment. He's lost in reminiscence. He does sound like yesterday's man. And it's not what we think of as leadership.
Well, I want to play what one of our listeners said. Dee Droege from Los Angeles, California, is a young progressive voter for the Democratic Party. She called the other day and left quite a long voice message about why she thinks Biden and other party leaders aren't up for the job.
It's just become abundantly clear to me and a lot of other people my age that the Democratic Party, as it currently functions with its current leaders, isn't really working for such a diverse and intellectually diverse group of voters. He's very much a status quo politician, and I think it's become clear throughout his term that while being a status quo politician allowed him to tackle issues like the pandemic quite swiftly and effectively, culturally, socially, I don't really think he has his finger on the pulse of what his voters want.
So, Mike, I've always thought that for Democrats, whomever the candidate is, it's a harder job because the base wants a lot of different things. I'm not saying that the Republican base isn't also diverse or that it's homogenous, but messaging toward all Republicans seems to be easier to do for the Republican candidate than it is messaging to all of the Democratic base. So how do we measure how well Joe Biden is doing given that more difficult task?
Yeah, I think that is an issue in American politics. The Republicans are mostly white. They tend to be quite a bit older, and so it is easier to message to a party base that is mostly the same. And Democrats' great strength, and it is also sometimes a challenge, is that we have this incredibly diverse set of voters in our coalition. I think that the key to success in politics is finding the issues that motivate the broad group of voters, both base voters and swing voters, that you need in order to win elections, and to do that with unifying messages, unifying policies, unifying rhetoric. And I think that's a challenge to do, but I do think it's possible. I think Biden has done that at times. I think Obama was able to do it some of the time. Clinton was able to do it some of the time. But it's not an easy thing for Democrats to do because of that incredible diversity in our party.
And Jonathan, in that diversity, we've heard from people who were talking about things like student debt forgiveness and voting rights legislation. But is that what is top of mind for voters? People keep telling me that it's inflation. Or is it, you know, does Biden have to be worried and focus on all of these things at the same time?
His plate is very full. There's no question there. Polling suggests that, yes, inflation is the number one issue here as we head towards late July ahead of the midterms, but it's certainly not the only one. Young voters, very much so. Student debt is on their minds. There's been a real rise per polling in the last week or two about gun violence being a major issue, about the aftermath of the Supreme Court's decision, abortion rights a major issue, and, you know, certainly with the remarkable historic heat in Europe and then another heat wave that's blanketed the United States. Climate change is a topic of conversation as well. Those are all things this president has to deal with. But there is, to a lot of frustration that some of this hasn't been done already. And I return to voting rights quite a bit, where the president delivered a series of very fiery speeches saying how he would protect the right to vote. And I detail a lot of this behind the scenes reporting in my new book, The Big Lie, out next week, and yet couldn't get anything done because he was blocked by members of his own party. And I think that really disheartened a lot of Democrats who spent last year, you know, after the 2020 election, heading into January 6th, believing that democracy itself was in danger and voting rights had to be protected, and yet the president couldn't do so.
I'm going to ask our guests to hold. We're discussing President Biden's role as the so-called transition president and how he's performed so far after 18-plus months on the job, and also where the Democratic Party is or should be going next. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. Today we are discussing President Biden's role as the so-called transition president and how he's performed so far after 18-plus months on the job, and also where the Democratic Party should go next. We're joined by Mike Lux, a longtime Democratic political strategist, Jonathan Lemire, the White House bureau chief at Politico, and also Jack Beatty, On Point News analyst. So the question that I want to focus on first is whether Joe Biden should run again in 2024. While, you know, in 2020, he won the election. I want to be very clear about that. He did win. But I would think that Democrats, Mike, would want someone who could win by an even larger margin than Joe Biden did in 2020, particularly given January 6th and the big lie that the former president perpetuated about election fraud, that they would want this to be a landslide. So do you think Joe Biden can deliver that landslide?
I think he can. We need to move in certain directions to do that, which I'll mention in a minute. But I also want to lead by saying I'm not talking about 2024 with anyone. And I actually think it's irresponsible for any Democrat to be talking about 2024 right now, because we got an election to win in 2022, which I think is actually quite possible. I am more optimistic than a lot of people are. I think things are moving in our direction in spite of the challenges, in spite of the problems. And I think we have to focus like a laser beam on 2022 and not 2024. But in terms of winning in the future, I think we have to do a couple of things. One is we have to address the fundamental economic and quality of life issues that matter to working class voters of all races. Which includes both our base voters, people of color, young people, but it also includes swing voters in working class towns across the country. If we can deliver more for those voters, both through executive action and through, my hope is we keep the House, we add a couple senators in the Senate, and we can actually start getting some things done that will really matter in people's lives, like reducing their healthcare costs, reducing their drug prescription costs, reducing childcare costs. And I think we can take on big corporations that are price gouging and profiteering, using inflation as an excuse and then bragging about it to their stockholders about all the profit that they're making. I think those are the issues that unite the Democratic Party and bring in swing working class voters. And I think that's what will win the Democrats a permanent governing majority if we address those issues. Obviously, we also need to talk about the way the Republican extremists are basically trying to take away most of our freedoms, the freedom to vote, the freedom to have an abortion, the freedom to live without being worried every day that your child is going to get killed in school. We have to take on the Republican agenda and fight the Republican agenda. I think if we do those two things, if we talk about what we're going to do on those issues that matter to everybody, and we take on the Republican extremism, I think we'll do just fine, both in 2022 and in 2024.
Sam Berkey is a Democrat from Cambridge, Massachusetts. He called in and told us that he voted for Biden in 2020 to lead the transition into the post-Trump era, but says he's been disappointed with his leadership so far and thinks another run is a bad idea, especially given his age.
There's no way he would win the next election, and if he were to get in, he would be 85 years old in this last year in term, which is 8 years older than the next oldest, who's Reagan. There were questions about Reagan's mental capacities towards the end of his terms, and this would be Joe Biden 8 years later, older, and it would be great concern already about how vigorous he is enough for the job. The best he could do is announce that he's not going to run again, but he's going to lead the Democrats in finding a good leader and let the Democrats kind of figure out who the best way forward is.
Now, Jonathan, I find it interesting that the criticisms, the people who say they're concerned about him running again based on his age, they knew how old he was in 2020, but suddenly now his age is becoming an issue again. How could he have addressed that, or how is he addressing that? I mean, he has a very young and diverse staff. He has a vice president that's more than 20 years younger than him. What else could he have done to address the age issue, Jonathan?
I think it was always going to present itself. And I think that there is a difference when, as for a re-election, that if he were to serve another 4 years, bring a total to 8, he would be pushing 86. Well, and that I think for a lot of Americans does feel different than electing someone at 78, and it is unavoidable. But this was a question that we did face in the first campaign in 2020, and obviously voters were satisfied with the answer because he won. But it's a question that's only going to loom larger as we head towards 24. The job ages people. Every president, no matter how young or old they are when they take office, 4 years later, we've all seen the pictures, whether it's Obama or Bush or Clinton or go on down the line, it ages you. Joe Biden is no exception to that. He will face questions about that. I think some of them unfairly posed on conservative media. And certainly the president keeps up a rigorous schedule. But this is something that he is going to face. Now, to be fair, his likely candidate opponent in 2024, were he to run again, Donald Trump, would also be in his late 70s at that point. But this is something that he is going to have to ask. And the president and his team, both publicly and privately, are working towards him running again. They believe that he is the best man for the job, that his poll numbers, even if they're low now, they believe there's plenty of time for it to rebound. They do think that he is the right person to beat Trump again, were Trump to be the nominee. And I do think their fates are intertwined, that if Trump were to jump in the race first, it would be difficult for Biden not to do the same. But of course, no official decision has been made just yet, and I don't think we'll get any sort of public announcement one way or the other into the first half of 2023.
So from a listener on Twitter, Bernsey writes, Biden is giving Jimmy Carter a run for his money in terms of notable presidential accomplishments. Even his executive actions, like those announced regarding climate change, are anemic and toothless in nature. He should not run again. Dems should replace him with Newsom, Gavin Newsom. Jonathan, I want to stick with you for a moment because if we're talking about who might be an alternative to Joe Biden, traditionally speaking, when you have a president and you have a vice president, the vice president is deemed the heir apparent. So why are we hearing from people like Bernsey suggesting people other than Kamala Harris?
Well, first of all, it's rare for a president not to seek re-election. So we'd be sort of in an unusual place for Biden to not run in 24. You are right that when a president does leave office, usually the vice president is indeed the heir apparent. But I will say, at least for now, there's a sense around the Beltway that the vice president would not go unchallenged. The field would not clear for her. Certainly, she would run. She'd be a formidable candidate. She would, one would certainly assume, have the president's support, the backing of most of the official Democratic Party. She would be the favorite. I think there's no question of that. But she is someone who herself suffers from poor poll numbers right now. There have been moments where she has seemingly struggled to get her political footing on a variety of issues. So, to be fair, she has a very tough portfolio, and being vice president is sort of a thankless job to begin with. And I think there are people who would probably underestimate her ability as a campaigner. But those who are critical of Harris point to her, track record so far in office. They point to her rather disappointing 2020 presidential campaign, and they would look around for other candidates. And Governor Newsom is one of them that you could talk to about other governors, Murphy in New Jersey, Pritzker in Illinois, among them, Whitmer in Michigan. I'm sure there'll be some senators who ran in 2020 who would be happy to do so again, Cory Booker, Amy Klobuchar, so on, and it go down the list. I think there is a perception, at least for now, that if Biden weren't to run, the field would be large and Harris would be the favorite, but not to the point where people wouldn't make a run.
So, Mike, and I take your point about this not being the time to talk about 2024 yet, but in talking about Joe Biden, we have to talk about 2024. And this idea that Jonathan brought out, that there could be a big field in a primary, if there is one in 2024, does that help or harm Democrats, do you think? Is it good for the party to reconsider where its future is and who should be the standard bearer? Or might it just be a bloody fight, an expensive fight that leaves whoever emerges weaker against the Republican candidate?
I tend to believe that big fields, were Biden not to run. I tend to believe that big fields are better for us. I mean, we had the biggest field ever, right? In 2020. And we came out of that with a victory in the fall. The Republicans had the biggest field, had a very big field in 2016. They came out of it the victor. We had a big field in 2008, and Obama emerged out of that tough competition and went on to win. So I think that big fields are healthy for a party. They allow a diversity of voices, not just demographically, but issue wise as well. And I think that's a very healthy thing for a political party.
Jack, what kind of leader is the Democratic Party looking for right now exactly?
Well, not Joe Biden, it seems. 64% of Democrats don't want him to run again. Their main reason, age and performance, which are, of course, integrally related. And fully 94% of Democrats under 30 don't want him to run. Now, Michael says, yes, he can show fire in the belly. He can do it. But, the reporting is so desolating about the president's performance. We read about calls not returned. We see aides not fired for screwing up. There are invitations that are not extended. A blind quote in the New York Times from somebody in Congress calls Biden rudderless, aimless, and hopeless. Adam Gentleson, the former aide to Harry Reid, says there's a leadership vacuum right now, and Biden isn't filling it. So he doesn't seem to be what his party wants. Now, who they want is to the crystal ball to say, but it just seems that people have been so unimpressed by the president's performance, by his public acts, by his maundering. I gave you an example of that, down and back in Scranton and riding the trolley. This is not inspiring.
Yeah. Jonathan, so people, it seemed Democratic voters wanted someone in 2020 who could beat Trump, but maybe are feeling now that that's not the same person or the same type of person, the same type of leader who can make that transition to for the party and for the country. But if Trump runs again, where does that leave Biden? He was seen as the one who could beat Trump. Or would it be potentially just a repeat?
Yeah, it looms as a real dilemma for Democrats, because you're right. Biden was elected. Certainly Democrats were fond of him in 2020, but he was not one who polling suggests had spurred the most passion among voters. But yet he was seen as the consensus choice who had the best chance to beat Trump, and he did. And I do think, and this is the case the White House aides make privately, that were Trump to run again, Biden would still hold that title. Now, he'd have to overcome more questions, right? He'd have to overcome questions about his record over the last 4 years, particularly, at least at the moment, his poor poll numbers, though he has time to turn that around. He also would have to face questions about his age. He would be 4 years older than in 2020. The list goes on. But they believe he would still be perceived as the best candidate to beat Trump. And certainly a lot of Democrats think, though, this specter of a looming Donald Trump candidacy is terrifying. They feel like Trump, because his unfavorabilities are so high, that he actually would be a Republican perhaps easier to beat than another GOP nominee, though it's hard to see anyone in the Republican Party beating Trump or the former president to jump in. So it is a dilemma. And I do think there will be some Democrats, though, who will want, despite Biden's track record of beating Trump once, will want to turn to a new voice, a younger voice, one perhaps with more fire and passion. Others will say, no, we should stick with what has worked. We should go with Biden again. We can't take a chance of someone losing to Trump.
So, Mike, it seems that Democrats, talking about the party in general, have a tough task. It's trying to move the party and the country into the future, become younger, more diverse, more progressive, while at the same time tackling the crises of the moment, which besides an ongoing pandemic, besides inflation, there's a war going on in Ukraine. This is a big, it's a big ask. So how do Democrats do that, Mike?
I think we do it by getting bolder, you know, by really working hard to push the envelope on solutions. I think that we have these enormous crises because the country has been ignoring issues for a long time. I mean, infrastructure was a classic example. And you know, until we passed this big infrastructure investment bill, we hadn't invested in infrastructure in a serious way in decades. So the result was, you know, bridges falling down and roads getting destroyed. And so there are a lot of those things where we haven't made the investments that we need to make. Climate change is the ultimate example. But I think what Democrats need to do is we need to think big, we need to think bold, and we need to get things done however we can. If we can't get it done through the dysfunctional Senate, fine. We do it through executive orders. We do it through regulatory action. We do what we need to do to get things done.
All right, Mike Lux is a Democratic political strategist and co-founder of Democracy Partners, as well as Mike Lux Media. Jonathan Lemire is the White House bureau chief at Politico, and his book, The Big Lie, Election Chaos, Political Opportunism, and the State of American Politics After 2020, comes out next week. And Jack Beattie is On Point's news analyst. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.